A native of Illinois, Dr. Arnold served as a director of Christian education at congregations in Detroit and Phoenix prior to assuming his position at Concordia University 13 years ago. He completed his master's degree at Eastern Michigan University and his PhD from the University of Minnesota in adult education. Dr. Arnold is an author of numerous articles for Lutheran publications. He's an active speaker, trainer, and consultant. He's scheduled as a featured speaker at the Youth Ministry 2000 conference in January. His youth ministry experiences included leadership at servant events, leadership at national youth gatherings, and in parish ministry while serving at Concordia. He formerly served as faculty advisor to the junior high youth gathering. While teaching at Concordia, he served his local congregation as junior high Sunday school teacher, youth counselor, and currently serving his congregation as Sunday school coordinator. He's also served on the board of Christian Education and Youth Ministry for English, the English District, LCMS, and the Board for Youth Services of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I asked Dr. Arnold to be with us today to share his thoughts regarding the ministry, the work of the Director of Christian Education throughout the parishes of our nation, knowing that a number of us will have the privilege, the opportunity, to work in team ministry with DCEs. With that, would you join me in welcoming Dr. Stephen Arnold?
Good morning. It's good to be here and to be a part of this and to have somebody who used to be in my youth group taking pictures of me while I'm trying to talk. But we'll see if we can make it through that. But we do have agreements about what we share and what we don't share as we come together. It's good to be here with you today and to be able to talk with you about issues of team ministry, and in particular to share with you the ministry of the Director of Christian Education and how we can work together within the parish. It would be helpful for me to know how many of you, how many of you have been a DCE that are here this morning? Okay, a number of you. And how many have come from congregations where there was a DCE serving? So we have some strong familiarity with this ministry, so I won't have to do a lot of explaining about it, but we will do some discussion about some issues that we are facing. One of the things that I believe it's important for us to begin to remember is that when we talk about really anything in life, God did not create us to work alone. Going back into Genesis, He created Adam, but immediately said, "It is not good for man to be alone." And so woman was created. And from that time on, we see throughout Scripture that God intends for us to live and to work and to serve in community. If I could make a slight correction to the introduction, all of you will be working in team ministry. There is no way that you can go into a congregation and work alone. And we need to understand that, because as the faithful people of God gather in community and the leaders of that community come together to work, we are called upon to work together to fulfill the mission that God has laid before us. And so it is critical that we learn to work in team with members of the congregation, with members of the staff, and also within our own families, because they too are part of that team ministry. It is important to understand that, because we must develop a mindset that says we will not even attempt to work alone. That's a difficult thing to do, because all of us, in many respects, are trained to work alone. I've heard many times pastors say at the seminary, we were taught, we're it, we have to do it. Lutheran classroom teachers essentially are told, it's your classroom, you run it. Now, in the DCE program, we have more of an opportunity to talk about team ministry than some of the other preparation programs. But even there, there's a tendency when you're a strong leader to not always be sensitive to working with people around you. And so DCEs also struggle with how do we work together to accomplish a ministry. Part of this is a cultural problem. Even though we were called and created to be in community, because that's the way God intended it, centered in Jesus Christ, we live in a culture that values individualism. And in the United States in particular, from our very beginning, we have valued this individual expression. Today we would call it a rugged individualism that allows me to do whatever I want to do because that's the way I should be free and allowed to serve. When you have a group of people who come together with an intention of working as rugged individualists, you have chaos. And you do not have an opportunity for people to work together. In Ephesians, Paul says, you know, that the body is to be equipped to work together that we might grow up in every way into Christ. And it isn't that working together, it's in that community that we can find the fulfillment of the mission that God has given us. It is not good for people to work alone. How is it that we can come together to accomplish the mission? First of all, to work together as team requires that we share a common vision. Now, we can have many debates about how that vision is to be identified. And if you go through the literature that's being written today about leadership in congregations, you have everything from staff-driven to pastor-driven to congregational-driven ministries. Well, we can continue that debate. But one particular author that I like, and I think he's one that we need to look at, is George Barna. And again, his theology is not exactly where we are, but he raises a good point in his book on vision when he says that instead of seeking the vision that an individual might have for a community, it is the responsibility of the parish leaders to seek what is God's vision for this community. And through prayer and through study in the Word and through a struggle of dialogue, we identify that vision. And then we all contribute our gifts to make that vision happen. I believe that's critical if we're going to work together in team ministry. Each of us comes together with a certain set of gifts to help make that happen. And as we combine those gifts together, the mission of God can be accomplished in that place. In team ministry, that becomes critical. Now let me just spend a moment bringing you up to date on some things that are happening within the area of the ministry of the Director of Christian Education. I've provided a sheet for you that you might want to take a look at. One of the things that's beginning to happen, and we were discussing this at breakfast, by the way, if you put a group of DCEs in a room and you ask the question, what is a DCE, you'll probably, in some respects, come up with as many different answers these days as there are people in the room. And then if you bring in a group of seminarians or pastors and you add to that discussion, it could just plan on spending the rest of the day. We are continually in dialogue about what this means. The only thing that I was ever sure of in my life, back in the days when one could be sure of things, I decided in ninth grade that I was going to be a Lutheran high school history teacher. I was convicted of that, I was convinced of that, and my whole time at Seward, I prepared to become a Lutheran high school history teacher. I have never yet taught history. In the second semester of my senior year, the final time of preparation for everything that I knew I was sure I was going to do, the placement director called me into the office and said, "We're starting this thing in the synod, and would you consider being a director of Christian education?" And I was one of the first to ask the question, "What is a director of Christian education?" We had never heard of this on the campus. There was some kind of a master's program, and there's this old guy running around, probably in his 30s. Looks kind of young today. but who was supposedly preparing to be one of these, but I had not a clue. But in my own way of doing things, I said, well, what do they do? And they said, well, here's what we think they're going to do. And I said, well, that sounds like fun. I'll try it. So go ahead. And so we said, well, in the usual placement style, we'd like to be in a city no larger than 500,000 west of the Mississippi. You know how that works with placement. And so when we opened the call documents and saw Detroit, we thought, well, okay, God, here we go. And so in 1970, I started off as the director of Christian education, and I think there were maybe 40 of us in the Senate at that time. And so I've been answering this question for almost 30 years and been involved with discussions that help people identify what it is. Well, it's interesting because this last year is the first time in which we're beginning to have some agreement about what it means to be a director of Christian education. And the document that you have in front of you is one that was put together last January here in St. Louis at what is called the National DCE Leadership Summit. And this summit is made up of the directors of the various DCE programs at the five universities, or now six, that present the prepare directors of Christian education. It included district executives. It included people from the Board for Congregational Services. There were some representatives from the seminaries. And there were people from the field as DCEs who came together. And at the end of this two-year process, and after a great deal of editing and dialogue and discussion, we identified this definition and these principles to be a guiding principle for both preparing directors of Christian education and for those serving in the field to begin to understand what is our common identity and our common calling. The next phase of this is another project I managed to get involved with, to develop a code of ethics for directors of Christian education that can be used as a standard by which we operate and work in the congregational setting and within the synod. But let me just highlight for you some of the things that we discussed and were brought up as a part of this. First of all, in the definition, you'll notice that we've included that a DCE is a synodically certified, called, and commissioned person. As a national leadership, we are very convicted of the fact, very important, that our congregations use people who have been synodically certified. When they go through our preparation system, we are committed to saying to the church that this student who is ready to be placed as a DCE has been received at least a basic education in theology and is sound in doctrine, that they have been tested and that their life is above reproach and is one who could be a role model within the parish, and we are saying to the church that they are competent as religious educators in this church body. And that is what synodical certification means when it comes to one of the directors of Christian education programs. As you know, there's a trend in the church right now to bring in lay practitioners who function in this capacity but have not been prepared for it. We feel very strongly as a national group that it is important that people be certified for this ministry. We're also saying that they should go through the regular call process before they should be allowed to teach, again, as a part of that testing, and that they should be commissioned ministers of the church. You will notice in the definition that we are emphasizing that a DCE is a lifespan educational leader. Directors of Christian education are prepared to be teachers of the faith, young children through senior citizens, because we teach how to teach. And they also then learn how to teach the faith across the generations. And we're saying that we prepare them for a congregational setting because it is the viewpoint of the various programs that the congregation is the center, the base for all ministry, and that any other ministries are to be seen as an extension of that congregational ministry. Now, I can't tell you how long it took to get agreement to that definition, but 2 years of debate and study and working with the words finally produced what we see as the definition for a DCE that is being used by the various universities and by the districts. We identified a mission, the mission of the DCE, to plan, administer, and assess ministry that nurtures and equips people as the body of Christ for spiritual maturity, service, and witness in home, job, congregation, community, and the world. We feel it's very important that we continue in this nurturing and equipping function within the body of Christ. And then values to which we aspire. A DCE exhibits Christian character, nurtures a personally maturing faith in Christ, relates well with people of all ages, expresses a passion for teaching and learning, manifests a servant heart, balances personal and professional life effectively, models a team orientation, strives for excellence, provides loving yet bold leadership, performs in a self-directed manner. These are the values, the characteristics that we hope a director of Christian education will display in working in a congregation. In terms of working in relationships with a pastor, the directors of Christian education understand that in this working relationship, the pastor has oversight over all teaching that takes place within that community, and that as such, we work together in a team. But one of the things that I stress is that while my theological education will not be as strong as yours until I've gone through this experience, chances are real good your training in how to teach will not be as effective as mine after 30 years of preparation for learning how to do that. And that together, we can do some pretty exciting things. That's how we need to work together in the parish, contributing our gifts, working together to help make it happen. I have been privileged in the 30 years of service to the church to really always be in a good team ministry with pastors. I have not had a bad team ministry with pastors. Now, that doesn't mean we have not had disagreements, because we have had disagreements. But we've learned in those situations how to work together, how to do problem solving, how to communicate, how to accomplish this goal together, because we were committed to the mission of what God had given to us in that place and at that time. As we work together in team, I came to respect so many things that I could learn from the pastors that I worked with, but it was also very interesting. The pastors that I worked with many times said, "Tell me how to teach." And so with our pastors, we would do workshops in adult education to help them improve their teaching. And many times I would go in and watch them teach and then sit down with them and give them feedback on their instructional techniques or help teach them some new ways to communicate what they wanted to communicate. That's how we can work together in team. On the other hand, I was continually going into their office asking questions about things that were occurring in the Bible classes that I was teaching, some insights into theology, some insights into Scripture, and out of that came some marvelous dialogues and times of working together. What I found was that as we kept the communication open, as we continually struggled with the vision and mission that had been placed before us, most problems could be solved. It's when we failed to communicate that we had our difficulties. Now, back in 1989 and then 1992, some studies were done about team ministry. And I'd like to share with you some things because I think that'll help frame a little bit of what we're talking about. First of all, what the studies found, and this was a remarkable response from a vast majority of the teams that were functioning in the Synod, is that pastor and DCE teams actually are working very well. Pastors and DCEs in the parishes of this church body, the research is showing us, get along well. Very little conflict. That doesn't mean that they don't disagree, but there is agreement that they are working well together. There is no evidence, it's just like at home, there is no evidence that either group, either pastor or DCE, is seeking undue authority. Rather, as they work in teams, the pastor DCE teams of this synod recognize that each has their own place within the team and is attempting to lift up the ministry of the other. I find that to be significant because there's so many horror stories of pastor DCE teams. The evidence just isn't there to support it. Now, 30 years ago, I think there might have been. But in recent times, we're just not seeing that as a difficulty. Pastors and DCEs are working well together. There is consensus among team members that they agree in the area of theology. The research that Karpenko did with this showed that pastors and DCEs, by and large, are in agreement about our theology, and they are in agreement about definitions of ministry and how we work together. The research showed that there is staff agreement on congregational needs, goals, and strategies, as well as an agreed-upon plan for achieving them. DCEs and pastors both prefer a structure in which each team member has defined areas of responsibility. It's very helpful within a team to know who's going to be in charge of what, and to have that clarified and to have that worked out. And that seems to be happening. Although, there seems to be more indications that DCEs will have role descriptions that are very clear, but pastors will not, because everybody assumes that the pastor knows what he's doing, and so sometimes they don't have as clear a definition of what portion of ministry that pastor will be doing in relationship to the others, and there can be a little bit of tension. They overwhelmingly agreed that they were treated with warmth and acceptance between pastors and DCEs, and that their teammates had good relationship and good modeling for the rest of the congregation. Now again, pastors and DCEs also expressed the need to pray for each other and to study God's work together, their word together, that became very, very important. One thing that did come out in the study is that pastors, more so than DCEs, perceived that good communication was taking place. So if you talk to the teammates, the pastor would say, well, yeah, we've got great communication on our staff. But sometimes the rest of the staff didn't always see it in the same way. And so that was one point of discussion that came out of this. And we really did find that there's a significant minority of female respondents that felt that their male colleagues did not share a common understanding of the role of women in the church, particularly functioning as directors of Christian education, and that became an area that needed to be studied and looked at a little bit more closely. Now, 3 years after that, there was a study that was done with the district presidents and district executives of the congregations of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod that helped us begin to see, from their perspective, some of the things that was happening. And let me just share a little bit of that. The major source of staff relationship problems. Now, this may or may not come as a surprise to you. Pastors and DCEs are getting along very well. What district presidents are saying, the ones who are not getting along very well, is when there's more than one pastor in the congregation. That the source of team conflicts seems to be pastor to pastor and pastor to principal rather than pastor DCE. And that these, in this study, were the two areas of conflict that took place. Why did these problems take place? Of the district presidents, 74% of them perceived at that time that the number one cause of the problem was poor communication, that there was not a good discussion, a good dialogue taking place between the pastor and the other pastor or whatever relationship. Another source of problems was unclear roles. Who is to do what? And another way of expressing that is at times the people involved were kind of falling all over each other in conflict over who gets to do what. Another source of problems were personality differences, which says to us that when you're placing people in team relationships, personalities do need to be taken into consideration. And if you have differing personalities, it's important to acknowledge that, recognize that, and address it in such a way that people can begin to talk about it and work with it. And then finally, a major source of problem was a clash in leadership style. Where this manifests itself is how does the team, for example, make decisions? How does the team mobilize? What does the team do if they don't agree? Do you set up a model that you don't move unless you have total team consensus? Or do you have a model that if there's conflict in the team about which direction to go or what kind of decision to make, you just simply say, let the pastor decide? Those are the areas where the conflicts begin. And if you have more than one pastor on the staff, that becomes even more complicated in terms of understanding which of the pastors makes the decision. This seems to be where a number of the problems are coming from in team ministries. And we're reporting an increase of those kinds of conflicts. When we look at what did the presidents and execs say were important to make a successful team, first of all, they said, the team needs to have a biblical attitude. Now, when you begin to understand what that means, here are some characteristics that they said. The team needs to have a willingness to forgive. I really think we need to go back and study the Eighth Commandment and to look at what does it mean to put the best construction on everything and to give the benefit of the doubt to my teammates, rather than to assume that my teammate is going to do something that will hurt me or violate my role. There needs to be a willingness to forgive. Confession and absolution within a team becomes absolutely essential. Another biblical attitude is that of trust. Trusting my teammate, knowing who my teammate is, knowing that as we work together, we are both truly striving to accomplish that mission. Accepting of differences, recognizing that my teammates may do things differently than I do, and that's okay. Working out ways of working. I tend to be a person, for Vacation Bible School, for example, my practice in the parish was if it was in July, we started planning Vacation Bible School in November. Now, when some people hear that, they say, why? And I have my reasons, because I believe that that produces quality. I've had teammates that in some of their practices, the Vacation Bible School was to start in July. June was a good time to start planning. There is a potential for conflict there. And so you talk about it, you work it out, you negotiate it. And in one particular instance, we divvied up responsibilities so that the person who liked to stay up all night the night before finishing this thing, and they always did a marvelous piece of work, we just agreed that I was going to trust him to get it done and stay out of his face, but he was going to let me go ahead and do the things that I felt needed to be done to get ready, to have things set and ready to go. And we, at the end of that little experience, had a Vacation Bible School that got written up in the Phoenix papers because of his creativity, and it was not because of what I did, it's because of what he did. And that's okay. So we had to learn to trust each other and work together and recognize that we were going to approach it differently and that that was not a problem. We need to learn in teams to encourage one another. It's interesting when I read Life Together, Bonhoeffer writes about the fact that a pastor should really not go before God in prayer condemning the community with whom he is working. Lord, why did you give me these people? Rather, to be praying, Lord, thank you for these people. How would you have me serve them? Well, I believe that's true about teammates. Not to go before the Lord in prayer and say, Lord, why did you give me this pastor to work with? But that my call there at that time is to be praying for my pastor, supporting my pastor, lifting him up in his ministry, and always speaking well of what he's doing, and that I would expect my pastor to do the same thing for me. That's part of how we encourage one another. And within a team, to have an openness to share burdens and to minister to one another and to support one another, recognizing that each of our ministries has its joys and each of our ministries has its challenges. How do we support one another? The district presidents found and said that for teams to work, there needs to be open and honest communication, which means that we must have the ability to listen to one another. They found that we must have provision for authority, responsibility, and accountability. Who's in charge of what and in what way? They said that we need to have consensus on the nature, the purpose of the church and its ministry, and have a shared sense of calling as servants of God. The district presidents and executives found that team ministry is more successful when there is coordinated staff meetings, where the staff comes together not only to share calendars, but to share vision, to share prayer, to share discussion. And finally, that the team studies and prays and worships together on a regular basis as part of their Christ-like life together. These are the things that we began to find out about how people can work together successfully. Now, what I would like to do is just stop for a little bit, and because time for questions and answers or whatever you need to do at this point, but I think this is a good time to do that as we look at this issue of team ministry. So let's see if there's any questions. If not, I'm always good at rambling on.
Thank you. I really appreciated your comments on just the team aspect. Something I noticed on Vicarage when I was out is that not only is there an extreme shortage of pastors out there, there seems to be an extreme shortage of VCEs as well. And I'm perceiving that when I get out there as a fresh pastor trying to establish who I am and how I'm going to do my ministry, I'll probably be working with the VCE doing the exact same thing at the exact same time. And I was wondering, what would be your five recommendations on how we could approach each other and establish a good working relationship right off the bat? And what can I do as a pastor to really convince them that what you were told in your training can come to fruition with someone like myself? And how should I approach that?
The first thing that I would recommend, and this used to be done on a regular basis, and I think as a result of these studies, many districts are now doing this, that any time you add a new person to your staff, that changes the dynamic of how people work together. And so it is important to go off as a staff, I believe 2 or 3 days at the minimum, to renegotiate staff covenant and to talk about, now, how are we going to work together with this new person? To look at the different personalities and to intentionally and formally begin to work out some agreements about how you're going to do that before you get into the situation that might be negative. I think the second thing that has to happen, and I believe this has to happen regardless, but there has got to be some built-in time for centering in the Word as a staff and as individuals. I am convinced as I visit congregations that in many respects we are over-programmed and we're overactive, and consequently we do not have time to just stop and reflect on the Word. I believe it might be important on a staff to just designate some times during the day to come together for prayer or a time for quiet reflection and meditation. We've got to, in a sense, slow things down and begin to focus. I believe you need to practice and work with good listening skills, and it doesn't hurt to bring in consultants, to bring in a counselor who specializes in communication practice, to have them, and they can. There's ways that they can do this to analyze the communication patterns of your staff and to begin to help you learn to communicate more effectively. I have a coworker, his administrative assistant, who is absolutely outstanding, but you can always tell when we're having one of those days because we'll start laughing and one of us will say, well, I think we're having a Venus and Mars experience here right now. And so we sit down and then try to intentionally communicate with one another because somehow we've recognized we're missing the boat. Now, those are some things that I can think of. And I think the other thing is to agree on how you're going to fight, because the fight is inevitable. There is no way that you're going to agree on everything. What do you define as a fair fight and how will you resolve it? Much better to get into that when you first start. And I would do that every time you add a new person to the staff. So that's only 4, but I'll have to think a little bit before I come up with 5. Yes?
Excuse me, I can barely talk this morning, but I had a question. I heard in the ELCA that when a new pastor comes, the entire staff puts in a resignation, and the pastor accepts their resignation. What do you think about that perspective?
I don't know. I can see some merit to that. I've gone through one situation where the pastor took a call, and it really does change the dynamic. But I'm not sure I'm ready to go quite that drastic. And most congregations are now including the staff in the calling process and interviewing process. As long as that can happen, that you can find a team that can work together, I think it can work. But there's other times when I think it's going to happen naturally. I've seen this happen where a new pastor will come in, has a whole different style, and all the people on the staff are brought there by somebody else, and there's kind of a natural transition, hopefully not painful. But I'm not sure I'm real excited about that drastic, everybody has to resign. I'm not sure what that says about the call of a commissioned minister for one thing either. But that could get me into another whole complication that I don't know if I'm ready to get into today. I don't know if that helps, but they do that, and I can see why, but I'm not sure I'm ready to advocate that for us.
You mentioned there was a desire of women as DCEs wanting to have a study of their relationship with pastors. I wonder if that study has been done or is ongoing, or if you could say more about the role of women as DCEs.
It's real interesting what happened with that, and I think we've got to do more study. As I looked at the data on that to try to understand what they were saying, I came to two conclusions that I've incorporated into our curriculum, and one is communication styles. I believe there are different communication styles between men and women. And men, as I have begun reading this, have a pattern of communication that is not always really effective. What happens, according to the people that study this, is that when men enter into conflict, for example, particularly with women, they will tend to kind of, you know, assert themselves, pull up their size, if you will. And there's even studies that show that men, when somebody disagrees with them, deal with the conflict by raising their voice. And they do not ask good questions to try and understand what the other person is trying to say. We will tend to continually hammer in on our point. Women, by and large, according to the studies, commit communication from a whole different style. And trying to understand, trying to listen, wanting to deal on a different level. And until we can learn more about those communication patterns, we're going to have some difficulties. Men have, and especially in a male culture, have a different way of communicating. And as we work together on teams, I think it's important that we spend some time learning how to do that. Now, I tell our women students very pointedly, It is a male-dominated world into which you're going to work, and I would encourage you to work with female mentors to learn how to communicate in that world. And I think they're doing a good job of doing that. But I think that's the first part. There doesn't seem to be any big problem. The only issue that is coming up in some congregations is whether or not women DCEs should teach confirmation. To teach past confirmation age, whether or not they're allowed to teach adults. I kind of hold to the fact of what the CTCR has said, that there's no distinction between male and female in terms of teaching in a community, and that age and who's being taught is not the issue, because the overall supervisor of that teaching is the pastor. And whether you're male or female as a DCE, that's where that teaching function and authority takes place anyway. So I don't know if that helps, but we do need to do more studies in that. But quite frankly, I don't know if you're aware of the fact, we have some funding problems in this church body, and these studies cannot be done for free. And until we can find some people to pay for these studies, we don't have answers. So we have to go to other disciplines which are studying communication patterns and these kinds of things and try to transfer it over. But we need grants. Do you have any? Let us have them.
Just like to ask a question in regards to DCEs and worship, and especially I know that at least in the circles I've been at, the DCE, male DCEs will be asked to maybe help out as an assistant in worship at times. And I know that the female DCEs feel like that they are doing it just because they're males, and they see that as confusing the role of DCEs. I'd like you to, if you could comment on that.
I think it's time for this to be over. And I'm sure we don't have time for that question. Oh my. I'm going to speak. I know how I want to answer that, but I have to catch a plane. And so I really hold to the view that the presiding minister must be male, and that is the pastor. But the worship assistant that is in, you know, in the liturgy, I think to me that can be discussed in some ways in terms of what is appropriate and what is not appropriate. I know we have historically allowed the called teacher. I mean, that was common practice even when I first started, for the called teacher to take a vacancy if there was no pastor available, or to preach, or even at that time, to consecrate if need be, if there were no pastors available authorized by the congregation under the supervision of another pastor. That practice, I think, has kind of dropped in the last 30 years. But I, you know, when you get into that issue of worship, is not a function to which DCEs are called. We have our students take worship for Lutherans, but it is not, and as we tell them, this is because we want you to understand how to integrate worship and education. And in most communities, I think it's just easier not to get into it because we are not called to lead worship. That is just not our function. We're called to be teachers. And so the congregation, to me, ought to argue that on the basis of the role of the laity in leadership of public worship, and kind of leave us out of it. So if you allow one person who's not ordained, then you've got to raise the whole other issue of what do you do with other people, and where does gender come in, and oh gosh, that's another whole convocation itself, and there's no exits up here, so I don't know. I'll just say this for DC ministry. We have agreement amongst the six universities that worship is not what we're called to do. And if we're called upon by a congregation to help and support and assist in that, then we make the decision based upon that congregation and that pastor. And I think that's the simplest way to put it. But this is a debate that I hope we engage in, because I think it needs to be a discussion that happens. I have been caught in some very awkward situations myself in the last few years because of the lack of agreement in the Synod, and quite frankly, the lack of agreement on the part of pastors as to how we're to be used within our service. Many expect that we're going to become, you know, if they're out of town, we take over, and we're saying, pastors, we're not teaching them to do that. You're putting us in kind of an awkward situation, because if we do start teaching people to do that, then we're setting up expectations that are not helpful. And so it's, I think we teach DCEs that we want you to be helpful, we want you to be servants, but remember what you're called to do and focus on that and not try to get yourself involved with everything else. Now, one area where I think is helpful, that I think helps teach the congregation. See, the reason I like a participative leadership in liturgy is because it models for congregation's team ministry. And one area where I wonder sometimes that it isn't helpful to have the DCE or teacher involved in the liturgy is serving as worship assistant at a baptismal liturgy. Because there, if we're trying to help people understand that Christian education is rooted in baptism and what takes place there, it helps the congregation understand that this teacher, this DCE, is in fact involved with now helping people understand what has taken place here in baptism. And so if we would view liturgy as teaching, which I do, that could be helpful. So there's a nice wandering approach to that topic. And I wish you would have waited just about 3 more minutes, because now I think we really are out of time. And I wouldn't have had to have dealt with that. But thanks for asking anyway. Anyway, what I just would say quickly in summary is, folks, you're going to be in team no matter what. Because unless you go to a congregation by yourself, you're going to be working with the people of God. And the same principles apply for working with laity as working with professional staff. And just keep at it, because there's a great deal of joy. I have loved every minute of working in teen ministry. I have learned from the pastors with whom I have served, and I have a deep respect for the kind of leadership that's going on in this synod. But do we want you to lead? Yes. But lead with that vision of God that works out of the gospel, that recognizes and affirms all of the gifts of God as we accomplish the mission that He has laid before us. And so with that, and I think you've got to be out of film by now, we're going to call it a quit there. Thanks.